Sometimes the biggest threats are the ones we can't see. The nation relies on a network of levees and dams to protect it from floods, enable commercial navigation, and supply hydropower. And many of these hydraulic structures include a component called a relief well that alleviates underground pressure when water levels are high. Like a giant straw poking deep into the ground on the landward side, the relief wells provide an escape outlet for water that seeps underneath the dam or levee. Without these wells, pressure would continue to build and place stress on the structure's foundation, eventually causing it to crack and fail. Yet, as integral as these components are, they can be nullified by a nearly invisible threat. As bacteria and other aquatic microorganisms find their way into the well, they proliferate in the oxygen-rich environment. This forms biofilm, a slimy scum that blocks the well's pore screen walls. Meanwhile, natural chemicals in the water oxidize within the well, leaving a residue that also limits water flow. As the well becomes less permeable, its ability to reduce pressure is also diminished. If not treated, the well will get so gummed up that it will no longer provide any practical value, increasing the risk of dam or levee failure.
The existing process to maintain relief wells is costly, hazardous, and labor-intensive. It involves rigged teams, heavy machinery, and large volumes of acid and bleach to kill microorganisms and flush away chemical scale. Wells are rehabilitated every 20 years at a cost of roughly $10,000 per treatment per well. And the need to move equipment and handle chemicals puts workers at risk. Hoping to improve this process, Erdic has developed an autonomous system that can clean relief wells in a safer and more cost-effective manner. Wellbot uses ultraviolet light and an oscillating wire brush to remove biofilm and chemical scale from the well screen. Costing about $5,000, the reusable system can be programmed to treat a relief well in days and then deployed to treat another.
I'm Megan Saxton, and with Chris Kiefer, this is The Power of Erdic. Our guest today is Taylor Rycroft, a research environmental engineer at Erdic's Environmental Laboratory. We will talk with Taylor about how Wellbot helps the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and its districts improve safety and save money while also better maintaining a critical component of our nation's dam and levee systems. Taylor, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Megan. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Okay, let's start by setting the scene. We talked during the intro about relief wells, but can you further explain what they are and what makes them so important?
Yeah, Megan, that's a good question. So relief wells are wells that the Army Corps of Engineers puts at the base of a dam or a levee or another hydraulic structure to reduce the hydraulic pressure that builds up underneath those dams or levees or hydraulic structures. So if you can picture a dam or a levee holding back a lot of water, that water is trying to find a way around the dam. And one way it attempts to get around the dam is to go underneath it. And so what the Corps of Engineers does is drills large tubes basically into the ground. It's like Chris said in the intro, or Megan, you said, injecting a straw into the ground. And it's just a big perforated straw, maybe 50 to 100 feet long, 8 inches in diameter. And it goes down into the ground and it gives that water that's sneaking under the dam or the levee a path of least resistance to come up on the other side. And so it eliminates that uplift pressure that the water would otherwise cause.
And so what would happen if they weren't there, or as we'll talk about later, if they became ineffective because they were gummed up, what happens then?
Right. The water would find a way to push up against the levee or the dam, and it could start to crack the foundation if there's enough pressure, crack the foundation of the levee or the dam, which can be really expensive and complicated to repair. And then in a worst case, and the Corps wouldn't let this happen, but it would crack to the point that the levee or the dam would fail. So that's an absolute worst case if nobody addressed the issue. But basically, it affects the structural integrity of the levee or the dam.
Sure. And then one more question, just in kind of painting the picture of them. You know, when you have a levee or a dam, I mean, there's more than one relief well. There's multiple relief wells, I'm assuming, and it's probably there's a formula that would determine how many you'd need.
depending on the size and the length of the levee system, for example, there could be tens up to 100. The dam I'm doing a field study at right now with the WellBot has 9 relief wells at it. And across the core, there's 20,000 relief wells for about 220 different sites, sites being either a dam or a levee system. So there's a number of these across the core.
Moving from there, this topic is all about maintaining relief wells. So tell us about that. What happens to them? Why do they need to be maintained? What does this maintenance look like?
Right. You described this really well in the intro. They get gummed up pretty easily by the natural microorganisms in the water, in the groundwater around these dams and levees, and in the chemicals like iron or sulfur, manganese. The chemicals form crusts. It's called incrustation. It's like chemical scale you might see on household appliances. And then the microorganisms form biofilms, which are just slimes, and they can get pretty thick. And those things, the crusts and the slime, start to gum up the perforations in the well. The important part of the well we talk about a lot is called the well screen. And it's just that. It's perforated, so there's holes so that water can enter and sort of breathe through the well. And as those pores get plugged up, the water can't enter the well and can't find its path of least resistance to get out on the other side of the dam or the levee. And so it starts to act as if the relief well's not even there. And then that leads to the pressure building up under the levee or the dam. And so we clean these. We clean them. We check them. The engineering manual talks about checking the wells every 5 years, and they typically get cleaned around every 20 years. And cleaning them is just intended to remove the scale and the biofilm from down in those wells.
So speaking of cleaning, what is the current process for cleaning and what are the drawbacks?
So there's two different strategies. One is physically cleaning it and one is chemically cleaning the well. Chemically is the common methods use bleach and acid. The bleach is intended to kill the microorganisms and oxidize a lot of the metallic substances in the well water. And then the acid part is used to degrade the chemical scale that's on the side of the well. The trick becomes when you're using bleach and acid, you really have to be careful with them potentially mixing, because if bleach comes down to a lower pH, which acid can bring it down to a lower pH, it can turn into chlorine gas, which is very toxic, and you have to be very careful around these materials. Plus, acids in bleach can just be dangerous for, you know, inhaling or dermal exposure. They're just dangerous to work with. But those are the two most common chemicals for rehabilitating wells. And then physical processes, there's surging and overpumping. Surging, I sort of think of it as just a giant toilet plunger. They just put these surge blocks at the top of the well and using a rig, a pretty large rig, and a crew of about 3 people probably, you pump up and down this block. It's just like a plunger, and it pushes air down and pushes water pressure down into the well and then suctions it back up, and it just keep doing that and pushes water through the pores and draws it back into the well. And that eventually removes a lot of the scale and biofilm in the well. Overpumping is usually drawing a lot of water out of the well quickly. There are other methods that use air injection, like air lifting. You inject air down into the well and the bubbles create turbidity and help some of the sediments and other kinds of crusts or biofilms on the side of the wall rise up to the surface so that they can flow out more easily.
So how effective are these current methods?
It depends on how badly the well is fouled up, but some districts have reported pretty poor performance with the acid and bleach technique. One district said they were getting 3-5% improvement with the acid and bleach technique, which is very minimal. And in other places, I've seen numbers between 20-30% improvement in the function of the well. I haven't seen higher than that. It's possible that they restore efficacy of the well higher than that with other techniques, but those are kind of the numbers I've seen thrown around. So it's limited.
And the chemicals you mentioned, you said they have a safety risk. Is there also an environmental risk to using these chemicals?
That's a good question. There is, of course, some environmental risk to using chemicals out in the environment, but the way that these chemicals are used down well is pretty contained to a small radius around the well. So the chemicals are dosed into the well to a certain level so that they do their job, but then they don't dissipate beyond the targeted region. They basically get consumed within the well and within a small area of the groundwater around the well.
So Taylor, tell us about WellBot. What does it look like? What does it do? What are its capabilities?
Yeah, so the WellBot is this device. It's a little robot that goes down into a well, and it's got chimney sweeping brushes attached to a UV light. And the brushes are stacked, so it goes brush, UV light, brush. There's two brushes, and the bottom brush oscillates forward and backward, and the top brush stays stationary, and the UV light irradiates the water and the sides of the well as this little gadget is raised and lowered into the well. And the raising and lowering happens from a reel at the top of the well that's attached to a cart. And the cart also happens to have solar panels on it, just in case at that location there's no electrical connection. A lot of the locations do have an electrical connection, but if they don't, the WellBot is solar powered. And the cart also maintains the batteries for the solar power and to power the WellBot. But that's it. It's intended to be very simple. Just a cart with a reel on it that raises and lowers this little brush light gadget down into a well.
And so I guess the UV light then is going to kill whatever microorganisms are in the well. And then
exactly.
The two brushes are going to clear off the biofilm and the chemical scale.
Right. That's the purpose of it. Because if you use the UV light alone, it wouldn't be able to penetrate the biofilm very well. The microorganisms are smart, and the outer layer of biofilm is kind of a sacrificial layer where it blocks anything from getting into the deeper layers of a biofilm. So you really do need to abrade that biofilm. You need to scrape it. And so we put the brushes in to scrape off all the junk along the walls, the chemical scale and the biofilm. And then when that stuff is suspended in the water, it gets irradiated by the UV light. And the UV light acts in two ways. We have two wavelengths coming off of that lamp. One of the wavelengths is intended to disinfect, so it kills any living microorganisms by affecting their DNA. The other wavelength that comes off the lamp creates what's called hydroxyl radicals, or reactive oxygen species, in the water right around the edge of the lamp. And those reactive oxygen species react with dissolved substances in the water, like some of the iron or the sulfur or the manganese that has been fouling up the well. So it's intended to both kill anything living in the well and also have some chemical reaction that helps get some of the material that fouls up the well out of solution.
How long does it take to make a pass of a well?
We currently have it set at a specific rate. So it goes up and down in about 20 minutes. We have it go down 10 minutes, come back up 10 minutes. You can set it to go faster than that if you want it to work faster. The trick with UV is that the longer you expose something to UV, the higher the dose that target receives. So microorganisms, you're more likely to kill them with a higher dose. So if we have the UV moving slowly, we're dosing those organisms with a higher dose of UV.
So then, and I ask this understanding that you're still fully solving this question, but tell us about kind of how long does it take to treat a well using the WellBot?
Right. So we are trying to figure that out right now. So our first field trial at Townsend Dam in Vermont, in partnership with the New England District. And we tested the WellBot for 2 weeks. And we took before pictures before it had cleaned the well, and then pictures after 1 day, 7 days, and 14 days. And from those pictures, you can see that the WellBot scrapes everything off of the side of the well pretty much by the end of the first day. So all that film and chemical crust is now suspended in the water or settled to the bottom of the well. Day 7 and day 14 from the imagery from that field trial showed us that the water clarity was a lot better, telling us that a lot of the sedimentation that we scraped off the well had settled to the bottom and presumably reacted with the UV light in that time as well. So we'd like to find out now in our next field trial how much the the well has improved in its functionality. And the metric for that is called specific capacity. We have these great pictures that show that the wellbot really did a nice job cleaning the well, but what we don't know is quantitatively, so what kind of improvement are we talking about with these pictures? And we'd like to be able to show that we get good specific capacity improvement within just a few days of using the well, so that a user could then just drop the wellbot in a well for a few days, clean it out, roll it to the next well in line.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about the existing methods for cleaning. How does this improve on the methodology that is currently being used?
Right. So we're hoping that the wellbot can improve upon current methods in four different ways. The most important one being safety, but then there's also efficacy, cost, and autonomy. And from a safety standpoint, we're trying to develop something that doesn't require heavy machinery and it doesn't require corrosive or potentially hazardous chemicals for Corps of Engineers personnel to have to interact with out in the field. And so we've done that with using brushes and UV light. UV light does have some potential hazards with it if you interact with the light, but the light comes on down well, and so no person is ever exposed to the UV light. So that's pretty much the main risk, is interacting with UV light, and the risk is very low when you wear proper PPE and you're not interacting with the light. In terms of efficacy, we're hoping that we can show that the wellbot improves on that quantitative metric called specific capacity, that some districts are reporting acid and bleach treatment is only getting them 3-5% improvement in specific capacity. We want to be able to far exceed that. We're hoping for a better than 20-30% improvement, similar to some other numbers we've seen come in for like physical methods like surging and overpumping. Cost-wise, this is a lot more cost-effective. To make one wellbot is about $5,000. Versus to treat one well, either acid or bleach or surging and overpumping, is about $10,000 per well. So if we can make a wellbot that can be used at one site, like the Townsend Dam site we're at right now, we would only need one wellbot. It treats a well over a couple of days, you roll it to the next well. The last metric that we're trying to improve upon is autonomy, so there aren't as many personnel involved in cleaning the well. This cart that we've designed is intended to be maneuverable by just one person, and they could set up the wellbot, just one individual, and then program it to go to the depth that we want to treat in the well. So in our cases, our wells that we're working with are about 50 feet deep. So we treat down to about 45 feet and then let the wellbot come up to about 10 feet below the top of the flange of the well. And we just set that and walk away. So we set the program to run and it just runs, and it's running right now. And I'm wondering how it's doing over there in Vermont, but it just, you know, and it worked well in our field trial at the end of May. It ran for 2 weeks without any issues.
Tell us about your background.
So my background is in bioengineering and environmental engineering. So my interest is in environmental treatment processes. So cleaning up messes basically in the environment and either using microorganisms to do that, or in this case, the microorganisms are causing the problem. So figuring out ways to safely and in an environmentally friendly way fix that problem.
And what led you to think about the problem of relief well fouling? Basically, how did the wellbot come about?
Right. So I was on a different project related to relief well fouling. And my task on that was to research some of the current methods and to better understand what an appropriate dose of bleach would be to inject into the well. And as I was doing some background searching on different methods, I came across brushes being used occasionally and then UV light. And UV light I use a lot in some of my other projects. And so I just thought, why not try to combine the brushes with the UV light? Because they both had the shortcoming of, well, the brush does a great job of scraping the well, but it doesn't kill anything that's living in the well. And the UV light does a great job of killing things in the well, but you can't penetrate the biofilm very far. So by taking these kind of two fairly safe and benign mechanisms and combining them, that's kind of how the idea of the wellbot came around.
Taylor, I know this is a collaborative effort between yourself and Zach Tomberg, who is an electronics engineer at Erdc's Cold Regions Research and Engineering Laboratory. Tell us a little bit about that collaboration. How did the two of you get connected on this?
So I reached out to the engineering resources branch at Krell, to the branch chief there, and asked for assistance with fabricating parts for the Wellbot and for electrical expertise for the Wellbot. And the branch chief there introduced me to Zach Tomberg. And from there, we've worked on a bunch of different inventions together because his skill set is so strong in fabrication of parts using like 3D printers or different machines that they have in the machine shop there at Krell. And then his electronics background is critical for this project, Wellbot, and several of the other projects that we work on together.
Has there kind of been a benefit of it being a multi-lab collaboration as well?
Definitely. I would say the multi-lab collaboration, I sort of bring the environmental bent and kind of the problem that we're facing and sort of an understanding there of the environmental implications. And Zach brings more of the mechanical, electrical, pragmatic standpoint of, you know, I'll introduce an idea to him and he figures out a way to make that actually work. I introduce it as sort of an under-engineered concept. Well, let's tape together some brushes and some UV lights, and then he mocks it up in SolidWorks and 3D prints some stuff, and all of a sudden it's complete. So it's a good back and forth between the two of us.
How did Erdc's culture enable Wellbot's development?
I think Erdc's culture was really important here in terms of promoting collaboration between labs. That helped foster the relationship between EL and Krell on this, as well as encouraging some risk-taking. It is R&D. We understand that things can go wrong in R&D or ideas may not ultimately come to fruition.
Who are your other partners in this effort, Taylor?
Within Erdc, it's EL and Krell working on this. And then outside of Erdc, we have partnered with the New England District of the Corps of Engineers and the Savannah District of the Corps of Engineers. So the New England District operates the site at Townsend Dam, where our field trials are taking place with the Wellbot. And they have 9 wells at the base of Townsend Dam there. And then Savannah District is one of the best in the business at drilling wells, rehabilitating wells, testing wells. And so their role in this project is to get the quantitative data that we're after called specific capacity. And so they've brought up a team of 3 individuals and a rig testing the specific capacity of the wells before we treat. And then they'll come back and they'll test the specific capacity after we treat to quantify what kind of improvements the Wellbot is giving.
Related to the field tests, I've heard you tell a story before about from the previous field test, maybe the first time that you had kind of driven to check on it and all that was going through your mind.
Yeah, I would drive out a lot. I'm about 2.5 hours from the site, but I would drive out pretty regularly because I was nervous that it had stopped running or a weather event had somehow messed something up with the well or with the Wellbot. One of the improvements that we'd like to put on the Wellbot is a remote communication with it, both that you could reprogram it remotely, but also that it can tell you that it's still running and then it hasn't run into an issue so that you don't have to run out to the site and check on it as regularly.
Sure, but I'm sure it was a relief every time you got there and you breathe a little sigh of relief when you saw it still going.
Yeah, it was nice to see it spinning when you got there. And I was very happy and a little bit surprised, honestly, that nothing seemed to get in its way over 14 days.
And then kind of were some of the thoughts in terms of transitioning this?
Right. So we already have some interest, actually, from different divisions that have reached out and they're sort of waiting to see the results as well. But Zach and I filed a patent through Erdc on the Wellbot about a year ago now. But I think our goal would be to not have Erdc mass produce the Wellbots, right? So there's about 220 sites that have relief wells across the core. And if they need multiple Wellbots at those sites, some may get away with one, some may need more. So if we're talking of upwards of 500 Wellbots to be produced, Erdc may not want to be involved in the actual manufacturing phase of that. And so we could potentially license the patent to someone who is interested in that work and then buy the Wellbots back from that vendor.
Sure. And you mentioned the existing method is wells are treated, you know, roughly every 20 years. Would this lead to more frequent treatments? And is there a benefit in having more frequent treatments?
I do think this would both do reactive treatment when you've identified a well that is fouled up already and you know needs to get treatment, but it may play a significant role in proactive treatment where, since it's so easy to use, you could drop it in the well for a day, 2 days, maybe up to 7 days, even if you're not sure it needs to be cleaned, just to preempt fouling. And maybe it becomes a once a year routine maintenance where the wellbot goes down into a well for a week every year and prevents fouling from building up and prevents the problem from getting any worse.
Sure. I guess similarly, in terms of being proactive, I mean, relief wells are most in service during high water events. Is this something too? Maybe if you knew there was going to be a high water event, there was a lot of rain in the forecast, et cetera, maybe you could do this proactively then as well?
That's a great point. Yeah, you could time it. The folks at these sites tend to know when the relief wells are more in play, and you could time it to make sure they're primed for those events.
What improvements would you like to make?
Well, there's the one that we touched on where we'd like to have remote connectivity to the wellbot so that we can change its programming if we need to, or we know if there's been an issue. That's the main thing. Okay. And then there's probably tweaks we'd like to see implemented. One is an adjustable speed of lowering and raising the wellbot in the well. Some of our interested stakeholders have mentioned that they'd like it to go a lot faster up and down in the well. Instead of down 10 minutes, up 10 minutes, a 20-minute cycle, they want to be cranking it a lot faster than that. So that's an adjustable thing we can easily implement.
Taylor, are there any other applications for this technology that you can foresee?
We do have a proposal in, actually, to see if we can use the wellbot in what's called an enhanced in situ bioremediation well. And in that process, what folks are doing is they're trying to clean up a contaminated site using bioremediation, which is using microorganisms. And the microorganisms are naturally there, but they need an additional carbon source, something yummy for them to eat. And so the team at this site is injecting, I believe it's corn syrup, down into the ground to encourage the microorganisms to grow and get activated so that they actually also eat this contaminant that's in the groundwater there at the site.
Hmm.
And the issue is the microorganisms get really excited about the corn syrup and they foul up the well that's injecting the corn syrup. So the PI that's running that project saw a write-up on the wellbot and reached out and said, could we make this work here? And so we do have a proposal in there, and I do think it has applicability there. Just requires a little bit of engineering tweaking. Those wells are a lot smaller than relief wells, but that's a pretty simple fix on the wellbot. But yeah, I would hope that there are other types of wells that we may be able to apply this to.
Yeah, sure. That's interesting. I guess as you get into it and...
Chris, there is one other thing I kind of... Sorry to interrupt you there. There is a interesting piece that someone in the district brought up to me is that not all wells are made from stainless steel, like the well that we're working in. Old wells are made from wood stave. They're like wooden wells. And then some are made from PVC, you know, heavy duty plastic. And so each of those wells, there's a different treatment that's acceptable for them. And so the wellbot,
is it kind of like a one size fits all?
It may be effective in all of those different well types. So that would be good.
Sure, that's interesting. And I guess as you get into it, as you test it more, as you get the results of this test, as it starts to be used more, I would imagine that's probably when even more applications come into play and you realize things that aren't even on the table yet.
Right. That's a great point.
Well, thanks, Taylor. I look forward to seeing what the future holds and where it all goes.
Thank you, Chris and Megan. I appreciate the opportunity.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, or USACE, operates roughly 20,000 relief wells at more than 220 different sites. Last year, USACE spent more than $10 million to maintain and clean roughly 1,000 of these wells. In contrast, the wellbot costs only $5,000 and it can be reused to treat many wells. It can also be used to treat wells more frequently and to do so without exposing workers to the risks of handling hazardous chemicals or equipment. Its ease of use will allow dam and levee managers to be more proactive in treating clogged relief wells, ultimately improving the safety of these hydraulic structures.
The Power of Arctic podcast is a production of the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center. Follow Arctic on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X for the latest information. You can listen to the Power of Arctic podcast on all major podcast players. Visit powerofarcticpodcast.org for more resources. You can also contact us at powerofarcticpodcast@usace.army.mil. That's all for today. We'll see you next time.